Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2021. This is a bit of a strange night. It's night 18. It was meant to be the final night, but for various reasons I've ended up... well, Morgoth is unwell, so we've delayed his stream until tomorrow. But also I wanted to try to have some extra streams today. That hasn't turned out to be possible, except for Aureus Press, which I'm very glad that I was able to arrange, because he was one that I wanted to have on from the start. And so this is Brendan from Aureus Press. So hello, welcome to Millennial.
Hello, and thanks for having me on. And Merry Christmas.
Thank you very much. Merry Christmas to you. So this will be the only stream tonight, but I think it will be a nice one. So here we go. So do you want to explain to people what the Aureus Press is? And I mean, it's obviously it's on Gab, it's on Instagram, it's on Telegram, which is where I follow it. Is it on Twitter, or is that trad? Because I can't remember if it's Trad Western Art on.
It's on Facebook, believe it or not. It has always been on there. That's where I started doing it as traditionalist Western art, because Facebook won't let me change the name. And their usual shenanigans. I've made appeals with them and had just the most frustrating long conversations and hoops I had to jump through to try and change the name of this page, this mine, but they won't let me do it. So that's traditionalist Western art there. It's that as its at handle on Twitter is still Trad West Art, because that's what I started it out with. But it's Aureus Press in the title, and everywhere else it's just Aureus Press. On Instagram, Gab, and Telegram. And although Instagram I don't really use, I never really took to it, even though I think that's where you first started following me. I used it for a bit just because there was a function for a while in Facebook to post to Instagram and Facebook at the same time. So I took advantage of that for a bit, and I haven't done it. I haven't posted there for a long time. I should probably, but it wasn't growing that fast, believe it or not, even though I post images like I do all day. They were kind of watching me there. Honestly, well, they might be suppressing me, because Facebook is really bad for it too. Yeah, but sorry.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if Facebook is suppressing you, but I am surprised that Instagram wasn't. I mean, because I was on there until sometime I think the middle of this year, and it is busy with our kind of people. Or at least it was up until the middle of this year. I'm not sure now. But it is obviously ideal. And I hadn't used Instagram until I got banned from Twitter, and I was looking for something to move on to. So I never knew what it was. You know, it still baffles me even now what Instagram is for. You know, it's just...
Oh, I hate it.
Go for it.
Well, it's for, girls to take selfies, I guess, really. It seems to be very popular with girls doing selfies, or sort of manosphere type guys making hardcore man videos. And I don't see a lot of in between, and like a lot of personal stuff. It's fine, I guess, but I didn't take to it. I hated it. I never went on. I probably didn't grow because I didn't actually use it. I wouldn't go on and check it. I hate it for some reason. I don't know why. I get more interaction out of Twitter and things, and Telegram now. Telegram is the best one. It's you're lucky in a way to only mostly be on Telegram. It's fastest. Like everything about it is. The only thing it's missing is the feed thing. That's one thing it could use if it ever did a feed, but it is by far the best thing.
Yeah, I agree. It's something that's a very obvious omission. I guess it's against the paradigm that they're going for of messaging, direct person between two things. But I think they should have it. Was it me who did I persuade you to start a Telegram channel? Because I remember you saying I can't remember. I'm not sure if I
You might have. You might have, yeah. It could have been, yeah.
I seem to remember you saying it's really good.
It was you, yeah. I think it was you. You're right, yeah. Okay. It was. Yeah. And I was impressed. I was like, wow, this is great.
Yeah, I remember you saying that the interface and how slick it is and how fast it is. So, I mean, I love Telegram. I'm not going to sing its praises, and I've done it enough before. But I do think it's a very good way to keep up to date with and keep connected to people.
So the speed and efficiency. It's little things that you've lost on Facebook and other places that you used to remember that are a fond memory. Just to be able to, it's fast, stuff like this. Like, it's really efficient.
Yeah, Facebook is alarming. It's very strange. I mean, for this is supposed to be the most popular social media platform in the world with unbelievable resources behind it, and yet it's so slow and clunky.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're constantly getting, you know, the warnings and things you get now they're just actually funny, really. Like, and the way they talk about it, like, your violations, you know, really threatening, you know, it's like very Stasi-like. It's known for that, obviously, for a long time, but it just gets more and more, like, they feel like they're a social authority, I guess. But the not only does it take, if you're posting a picture there, it takes about, like, literally, I don't know what, more than 5 seconds, 10 seconds maybe, of sitting there going through the screen, waiting for it to load. It's the morning. Do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? And all this bullshit.
Yeah.
And, I keep now lately, if I even post a picture, what did I do? I posted a meme recently of, like, it was mocking like a blue-haired girl or something, but it was really very mild, something extremely mild. I can't remember what it was. I wish I did. But just kind of mocking her very subtly, and I got taken down, and I got a warning for bullying. Because even though it's like a random girl, it's not, I wasn't like a specific person, but because I... You know, this, I don't know. They're just over.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is the kind of stuff where you say that they're becoming more and more of an authority. I think it's because they're becoming, their system is becoming better and better at enacting authority. And I don't mean that in a good way. I mean that their methods, God knows what algorithms are going on, you know, during those 10 seconds when you're trying to post a picture. Yeah. Who knows what is going on, but there's clearly a lot is happening. Either that or the system is just incredibly clunky. But either way, they have all these surveillance techniques. Because how the hell did they know that picture is
I believe
I
believe it's personally monitored. And I actually know a guy well that works at Facebook because they have a headquarters here. Or he did. He's quit, I think, since actually. And he was saying it's often. It'd be individuals, really. There's algorithms at work, but he said there's teams where he was working. There was teams of just like your very typical, you know, liberal women and like gay Brazilians. He said he couldn't believe the amount of gay Brazilians, and they're all working away, obviously very, very hard left, and like they have meetings about how to, you know, suppress everything.
And they all have blue hair.
Yeah, all that shit. Yeah. So, but he said there's often just total rampant incompetence and individual ego. Someone's like, they're there and they come across your site and someone targets you like that. This is what he told me. I can't verify it, but that's what he said. And I kind of believe that. And especially, like I said, the hoops I went through trying to just change my name. And I would talk to somebody and I'm like, I can do this, right? And they're like, oh, yeah, no problem. And then I would go around in a circle and they'd play a little game with me and I would never be allowed to do it without explanation. They just like run me around like a horse in a stable and then nothing. And I don't
know.
You know? Yeah. I mean, I pretend it's the business. I pretend it's like a professional thing. Oh, this is for my business, even though it's not. Like, it's just,
yeah.
You know,
but I mean, this gets us to the issue of big tech when you find yourself dealing with one of these monoliths. And, you know, at least in the case of Facebook, you are communicating with an individual. Instagram, you know, when I got banned from there, and this happened to several other this exact process happened to several other people that I know. I got banned and it didn't say what I'd done wrong. It just said for violating our terms. And then furthermore, it said in cases where the user has violated our terms, there is no possibility of appeal, of appealing the ban. So, you know, with Twitter back in the day, which like 3 years ago, you could appeal it and you got an opportunity to actually say something, to make your case, to defend yourself.
Right.
But I think at this point, it's obviously a different company, but you know, Instagram, Facebook, but it might just be a cultural change in big tech in general that they don't care to give you a chance to make your case and defend yourself, because there's no benefit to them in doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we all know they don't care and they'd want... Like, I actually, on my Facebook page, I can say... was very badly suppressed, like some kind of sort of shadow ban that I couldn't determine. People kept saying it just doesn't show up in their feed or whatever. I almost gave up on even using it at all, but I've done that many times through the years, but I always think, it's got like these 100K people just hanging in there. There's people on Facebook that never left Facebook and, you know, you can reach them or whatever. But as soon as the last election went through, all of a sudden that was gone. So they thought I was out there, even though I didn't support Donald Trump since he, you know, missile bomb Syria. I gave up on him right away, like for the rest of his presidency. They suppressed my page for until Joe Biden was elected. I'm not even American. I don't give a shit. Like, well, I do, but you know,
yeah,
it was very, very, very obvious. After that election, this shadow ban was lifted, and I got my reach back. And I thought that's so pathetic that they were. That was obviously all across Facebook. Anybody that they ticked a box, they thought always, you know, this is a Trump person or whatever.
That's amazing. So once the threat of Trump was sort of vanquished,
yeah,
they could allow his fans. Interesting. I'm surprised that they did, because I would have thought it was in their interest to just keep people
keep me shadow banned. I mean, unless it's some other coincidence, that was the timing of it when I got my reach back. And you know, I avoid saying anything political on there. Not entirely, but I try to.
To be. Because I've noticed that you post different things on different websites. I like with your Gab feed, I recognize some of the photos. You'd actually posted one that I really liked on Gab, but I hadn't seen it on Telegram. It was a sort of Arctic landscape. It was really nice.
I like to do little tricky bits like that. Often it's just total happenstance. Like, what am I doing? Usually I'm working on the computer, and I also have these other pages open. I come across an image, and I think, that's lovely. I'll post that. And whatever page it makes it to is where it makes it. Like, it's very haphazard. I don't really.
Right. I guess we should explain what it is. First of all, the name. You've said you wanted to change the name. So what does aureus mean?
It's gold golden in Greek. I was originally going to go with something like Oak Leaf Press or something. I wanted to get into simulating a publisher, even though I'm not really a publisher or anything, just for like my own books and literature and things, anything I might want to do. I happened upon aureus Press at the time. Kind of wish I didn't have press in there now, but I'm not going to change it again. So,
I think it's nice. Honestly, I think that's a really nice thing to have that word in the text, because it makes it sound like that's something that's constantly churning out things, and which it is. So, I think it works.
Thank you. But originally it was traditionalist Western art, and that was all about. I only took to Facebook and Twitter I'd written this book on art, which I did a show with you once about it, and you since forgot. You forgot when you contacted me on Instagram, you forgot that was the same guy that was on like a couple of years ago. That was funny.
Yeah. I remember that you were on traditional Western art, but I think I must have been following you on Twitter on my various.
I didn't at the time I was on that millennial. I wasn't on Twitter. I didn't go on Twitter until 2017, 2018, I don't think. But originally it was all about art, right? So that was it, traditionalist Western art, because I had this book, and then my book was about art. But since then, I've written another book, and I'm writing all kinds of things. So it's not that I'm moving away from art as a topic. It's going to always be there, but there's other things now, too. So I just kind of instinctually post whatever I think fits with whatever you might expect from me, let's say. That's the best way to describe it, probably.
So let's get to that then. What are the kinds of things that you post? And you know, I mean, I'll summarize this. There are a lot of photos of it's in quite a range of different aesthetics that is posted on the aureus Press. You get sort of 60s interiors, 70s buildings and interiors. 80s sort of sci-fi stuff occasionally, lots of classical things, a few Victorian era things, and lots of photos of women.
And muscle cars, don't forget muscle cars.
Oh yes. So what would you say about the aesthetics of the 60s? You know, when you post things like that, what is in your mind? What do you think about these aesthetics?
Well, it's not even so much a particular fascination with one decade or the other exactly, as for me, there's like a cutoff mark where aesthetic taste took a nosedive. I'd say
He's gone. What the hell just happened? Oh dear, I wonder what's happened here. Let's see.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, you're back.
Okay, it muted itself without me even touching the laptop. That's basically what happened. Don't ask me what happened there.
Okay.
All right. Okay, so sorry about that. What was I saying?
You were saying it's not even the nostalgia for a particular period.
No, in my view, it's all pretty good up until this was really the topic of my first book. I know you don't fully agree because you have your brutalism likings and things like this.
That's a guilty sort of. You know, that's a guilty pleasure of mine. Yeah, I don't approve of brutalism for the real world. I just like it as an aesthetic.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so it's more like I want to remind people of how aesthetics should be and what it really means. And it doesn't necessarily like ever since I started the traditionalist Western art, I got a lot of imitators. There's people that started on their own in parallel to me as well. But there's other ones that just sort of like saw that you could get fast growth on social media, posting pretty pictures of castles and so forth. And they sort of just mimicked what I was saying about modernism and things. But really, truthfully, that aesthetic taste covers a wider range of just not just specifically classical or traditional in the sense of like it's nothing but Norman Rockwell church paintings and things, right? Which a lot of people actually get mad at me about that I don't just post that. That I do post girls and muscle cars and things. A lot of people get very angry about this, I should say. But the aesthetic decline is something else. And I think you would, whatever your thoughts on brutalism, I think you would agree that, say, art, architecture, and so forth. I mean, everybody in our circles pretty much agrees on
this. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
The whole standard is gone. It's been ripped up, and they can't even seem to get back to it if they tried. So I wanted to just remind people how it should be. And to do so, I can take from any of those eras, and even up till now, very rare examples. But generally, you're going to find more stuff if I'm looking for aesthetic things that grab me and say to me, like I said, I don't think about it too much. It's very instinctual. I think, that's something I would like to remind people about, you know. And it'll be like could be like a 70s bodybuilder, or like obviously beautiful. Any beautiful woman in the proper setting will do as well. Even just a nice landscape, like a photograph of a landscape, not even just paintings. I used to paint more, post more paintings, but I don't just exclusively do that. But so that's what I would say about that. I do love the 60s. I do love the 70s and the 80s and all that, and the 50s. I mean, all the eras. I mean, there's so many excellent things. They're from the 30s, Art Deco. I post a lot of Zeppelins all the time. I always love a good Zeppelin photo. kind of thing. So from any of that, I can take, this is what I noticed ever since I was very young, is I can look or take from any era from in the past and find something really that will grab you aesthetically and think it is linked in a course of evolution that makes sense up until not even specifically, you might say the 80s or 90s, but like it began, say, with painting in the 20s and then sculpture and moved into architecture. And it's just like everything just entropically dissolves in the soup, I think, basically because of our values. But this is really the topic of my first book, and much like the first millennial we did. But that is behind everything I do. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. And definitely, you were saying that definitely there is a cutoff point around about 1985, because I don't think you post anything at all from the 90s.
Oh, do I not? Anything I would post might be more of a guilty pleasure. I mean, you would think that some of the things I post already are extremely guilty pleasures, but I don't feel that ashamed about any of them, to be honest, really. But also, you're on Telegram. Not everybody gets the Telegram experience. That's where I really just don't care. And I'll post like, you know, there's more girls on Telegram, let's say. There's no girls on Facebook. Actually, there is the odd one. There is the odd one. And I still get grief over that, too. I can post a picture of Brigitte Bardot almost fully clothed on Facebook, and I will get the angriest messages from people like, you're a coomer or whatever. All this, like, absolutely losing their minds.
So what would you say to that? Because some people would say it's like it's misogynistic or it's unhealthy. It's like a sort of porn or fetishizing the female form. I can imagine people from different political persuasions objecting to it. So what would you say to them other than just piss off, I guess?
Pretty much piss off, yeah. I say, well, you know, you can post whatever you like on your page. You know, why are you getting irate over this picture of Brigitte Bardot or Claudia Cardinale? You know, this is silly. I don't personally have a moral or other problem with it. I don't think it's porn. I do object to porn. You know, the line of porn is something I've discussed before, which is very hard to find. I don't know if you've ever tried to think about it. It's where.
Yeah, I didn't say. I didn't mean to say that it is porn. I can just imagine people sort of saying that it's, yeah. Well, titillation, let's say.
Yeah, yeah. And even you'll see on Telegram, people still will get like, oh, you're going to stop it. You're going too far. Or, you know, anything I post, it doesn't bother me. And I don't think of it like some of these young kids. I didn't understand it for a while. There's two type of people that will explain about it. I think there's the very traditional kind of trad cast who doesn't want to see anything to do with women unless they're covered kind of thing, which is fine. And I do agree with a lot of what I was raised Catholic, and I don't object to them, and I don't wish to piss them off. But at the same time, you know, they're not the kind of Catholic I remember growing up. Like I said in a recent post, I remember Catholic schoolgirls as the most ribald sex machines the world's ever known, first of all. So I don't have a problem. I don't have a personal moral or other problem with posting beautiful women.
And yeah,
but it's not the same for anybody else.
Yeah, I remember you saying that. Because I should say, it's not just on Telegram. It's not just photos that you post. You also do post thoughts as well. Well, meaning thoughts as in, you know, things you've...
Well, that's actually the whole point of the whole thing. Would you believe it? The thoughts, thoughts, yes, is the point of the whole thing. That was a trick I learned that my little imitators also caught on to, although their thoughts were not so amazing, you put little bits of what you're thinking in between. Like, first of all, you draw them in with these pictures, like totally normal people. And you say you post, you know, the castle and the beautiful scene, the beautiful woman, and they're entranced and they want to know more. And then you slip in little bits of, I won't say propaganda, but let's say philosophy. And yeah. It's very effective, I think. It's very effective.
Yeah, it is. You were saying that there are two different types of people that you can see objecting to. So the one is the trad cats, and what's the other type?
Yes. The other type was shown to me. There's a girl on Telegram. What's her name? She explained this to me, and I was like, ah, you're right. It didn't occur to me. What's her name? Astrofash or something. She said, what was it? Oh, so with these Zoomer kids that have grown up with major porn addiction, you know, just porn as like, and they've finally got away from porn and they've made it this because it was actually destroying their lives because they literally were doing nothing but jerking off. I mean, we did not have this experience. You know, we're old enough to have grown up fairly normally and not had a, you know, maybe I was going to say had a healthy relationship with porn, but no, that's not what I mean.
It was nothing like it is now.
No, and we didn't jerk off all day. And I don't think of when I see a beautiful girl, I don't think, oh, I'm going to jerk off, or I'm posting this to tell you all that I'm jerking off or something. This is a big blip, but they think this. These kids.
No. They never occurred to me that's what's going on. You'd have a very you wouldn't have much spare time left in the day.
No. So some of these kids that are recovering porn addicts get very upset about this. So a lot of them are them, and they get angry, and they're like, "Stop doing that!"
I see. That's actually sad. That's actually a real shame. You know, for them that they're in that situation. And I guess it's so pervasive nowadays that it probably is quite easy to grow up in a twisted way. I mean, the internet has. This is definitely one of the terrible things about the internet. One of the terrible ways in which it's affected people. But obviously that's not what you're doing or what you're trying to encourage. This is an idea that occurred to me a few weeks ago. I was thinking it's almost like you post these images of women so as to remind men of what women should be like and what they were like and what they should want women to be like.
Yeah, that's for sure. I want to promote a virility. I'm very pronatal, etc. I want, you know, you can't be virile without noticing sexy girls and being happy about it. to within a degree of tastefulness as well, of course. But I think it's too much to go either way, to go the opposite way. And fertility and virility, I do like to promote it. And I don't see any way. I just remember how things were when I was young. I'm getting old now. So when I was young, there wasn't so much hang-ups about it one way or the other. You know, there was a certain amount of you know, you would see in England, you'd have your page three girls and everything. Like, it wasn't like in the more traditional society that there wasn't nudity and the idea of certain ideas about women. You know, I believe most of feminism is a total fabrication anyways. They, you know, the idea that they were oppressed and everything is almost entirely just, I mean, to a certain degree, they have to be not oppressed, yeah, but they're, well, you know what I mean? But
yeah.
I'm getting lost in the weeds there. What am I trying to say? That they, there should be a certain amount of healthy observance of the beauty of women, let's say. And you should feel like you want to go out and get one. And like what I remember from growing up Catholic was more, it was opposition to just non-virile sex, like gays and things were kind of, you know, it was not promoted to be gay, let's say. But you wouldn't like just totally hide away the girls or never think about the beauty of girls or women, I should say, not girls. But,
Yeah. I mean, another way to say it would be that it's a celebration of female beauty, and you know, why not? I honestly don't see what the harm of it is.
Neither do I. There's a great quote by Robert. Sorry, let me say one thing. It popped in my head. Robert Williams. He's a great kind of pulp artist. He had a quote, which this is going too far. He's a bit sleazy, actually. I wouldn't think this, but it was like he said he would rather look at a beautiful woman's ass than like the most amazing shots from the Hubble telescope of a nebula in deep space, in comparing like beauty. And I was like, well, yeah, you know, maybe it's comparable, I guess, you know. Not he was talking about the, you know, just
depends on the nebula.
The beauty of women. The beauty of women is pretty shocking. Like, it really hits you almost more than, you know, almost more than anything else.
Yeah, it does. And that, I guess, it brings us to another thing, which is that posting these images of beautiful women is a contrast to what we see in the mainstream media today, where there's almost a celebration of, ugliness, right? Not just degeneracy, but active ugliness.
Yeah. I've noticed lately the thing is to have for them to, like, the ones who can grow little beards and mustaches, we'll just let them grow. Have you seen this?
No, I haven't seen that. That sounds appalling.
Oh, this is the new thing. I've noticed it on these TikTok things. Just women. Because, you know, a lot of women, I think, if they don't, they can or will grow little mustachey type things if they don't take care of it. I think we all know that anyways. So these ones are just letting it go and like growing little beards and thinking it's great and showing it off. And like,
that is so awful and unhealthy and, you know, dysgenic. You know, I can't imagine. It's just another sign of how much our culture has declined, that anyone would encourage a young woman to think that this is a good idea.
Well, they think they're perpetually rebelling against patriarchal standard of beauty. This is the idea they get in their head. They think that Marilyn Monroe or whatever pictures I would post, they think I'm going to go against that to, you know, to say, fuck you, because that's what you want or something. And they think that's, I don't know. I guess they get taught from the beginning that they're this oppressed slave and they want to get revenge. It's got to be something like that. They're getting revenge on the world and they're making themselves appalling. They're not just ugly, but like unhealthy. Like they got this obesity thing, fat acceptance.
That's what I was thinking of when I said that celebration of ugliness. I mean, that's one version of it. The unbelievable fat, like the obesity, the fatness, and calling it beautiful. Actually saying this is beautiful. Everyone is beautiful. There are different kinds of pretty and this kind of stuff where I'm sorry, but it's just a lie. I mean, in the same way that I once saw a commentator, it was Davis MJ Arini, saying, if you want to hurt a guy, tell him that he's stupid. He's unintelligent, or incapable or idiotic. If you want to hurt a woman, tell her that she's ugly. And I think that's broadly true. Men want to be capable and skilled or intelligent. Women want to be pretty. It's just an inbuilt thing. I don't believe for a second that this is something that's ingrained into us by culture. I think it's so powerful that it just has to be innate. I mean, what guy is would be happy to be thought of as stupid, unskilled, and idiotic? It's just I can't imagine a guy. And what woman would be happy to think that she was ugly?
Yeah, they get caught in these little feedback loops within themselves as well. I noticed, like, I remember before the fat thing, they were given out about size zero models and everyone had to be super skinny.
But well, that's that sort of 90s heroin chic thing.
Yeah, but they did that to themselves. That wasn't, I remember, you know, men generally like voluptuous women, really, you know, like in more patriarchal times, you had your Marilyn Monroes and so forth. That's what men really like, I think. You know, you like thinner women, like at least somewhat voluptuous and not rail thin. Like that whole fashion, size zero stuff was started by women and I think gays selling magazines to women, and they were all buying it for the fashion stuff. And then a few years later, all of a sudden they're all getting fat, saying, "Oh, the patriarchy insists that thin is beautiful." But they really started that themselves. Men like a nice, I think, overall, most men aren't that picky about it, really. I mean,
they want a
woman beautiful women healthy. Of different sizes. But, sorry, go on.
Yeah, I think most men want a woman who looks healthy and fertile.
Yeah, if she's not too obese or too skinny, you know, that's, there you go. Yeah, healthy and fertile. Yes, kind of soft and curvy.
Yes. yeah, I think the 90s was, in that regard, is an interesting sort of, it's like that was there was a nosedive into the size zero thing before this drive upwards into the obesity thing. It's weird.
It kind of started with if I recall, there was a famous Dove ad from, I don't know how long ago now, maybe it was 2010, 2015, maybe as late as 2015. Do you remember this?
I do remember, and I remember reading that apparently their profits skyrocketed after it.
I remember every woman on Facebook loving it and sharing it and thinking it was like a piece of philosophy. And it was an ad saying, "We're all beautiful, no matter what size, however we look," this kind of thing. And that was the first time I remember seeing that idea as product. And it's basically been the same, but worse ever since.
Yes, you're right. I think it did seem at the time almost baffling. In that sense, that I hadn't seen anything like it either, but they were basically asserting that every woman is beautiful. There is no such thing as an ugly woman or an unattractive woman. There's no such thing as an overweight woman. Which, I mean, it's weird. I think it goes against what women instinctively know. I think they instinctively know that this is utter, that this cannot be true. But they also want it to be true, because it means that they definitely are attractive. But at the same time, even then, it doesn't work for them, because if every woman is equally attractive, then how is she going to get a guy? What's she going to do to, you know, so it's also that it's sort of latently dysgenic. Well, and explicitly dysgenic, obviously, if you're celebrating being overweight and whatever.
Yeah, and the smart ones seem to be aware of this anyways, but a lot of them fall for it. And yeah, the Instagram probably doesn't help. I don't know. You were actually, I must say, because you mentioned it there, Davis Arini, I remember I used to follow him years ago, and he used, are you having, is was he on Millennial this time? I know you,
he was on, he was on last year. He wasn't on this right. year.
All right. Yeah. He used to be good in his funny little way. He was one of the first guys I remember seeing on YouTube talking about some of these ideas actually.
Yeah, me too. You know, he gets a bad rap, which I think is unfortunate. And I understand why people find him annoying. And he does have a certain persona, for sure. But the thing is, his early stuff was really, really good.
It was.
I mean, there were several videos that, you know, I discovered him in, I think it was April 2013. So it was just... and I've talked about this before. I've told this story many times because it's the genesis of my own channel. I was directly inspired by his channel. I loved... He had this... And it's funny because this goes to show how aesthetics matter. He had a crappy camera. And there was a sort of really nice grainy feel to his videos. And then he got a new camera and I just didn't enjoy his videos as much anymore. even though it was still him, you know, talking and whatever, but there was just something that's just lacking. It was lacking the coziness of the early stuff. And we're talking, when I say the early stuff, that there are dozens, I don't know how many videos that there were on that channel, from 2012, 20, I guess when he started, it would have been maybe 2011. I'm not sure. But it was 2011 and 12. It was 2013 when I found it. And there were loads. It was like a treasure trove of videos. And I hadn't discovered something like it was an eye opener for me. It was a real eye opener because he was a guy like I identified with him in the sense that he was a guy immersed in this world and in this age. He wasn't LARPing as someone from 100 years ago or something. He had acknowledged that he was of this era, but he was saying that in many ways it would be better. It was better 100 years ago. It was better 200 years ago. But I'm not going to pretend that I am a traditional guy because that would be a lie. I am of this time, and I identified with that.
He certainly made smoking and drinking whiskey look good too while you're talking away. I hope that it wasn't what inspired you to smoke.
No, I was already a smoker for years and years, but before that, but I've stopped now. That was part of it. It was just the aesthetic I really liked. It felt like you were having a chat with a friend. And I guess that led to my own stuff. But the thing is, it's not just that he inspired my own stuff. It's that his videos were good. You know, there was one about, actually, that's now relevant. It's come back, which is the post-scarcity society. He did one about that, which was... I'd never heard of it before. I guess it must have been something that people were discussing at that time, and it fell away, once the alt-right took off and people were just talking about race and Islam and feminism all the time. But there was that era, I think the reactosphere, there was more a broader range of topics. So he did one about that. He did one about the economics of women in the workplace, feminism, was it worth it? These are titles that I can recall that were fantastic.
Yeah, there was lots. He'd always have a good take, an interesting take you didn't expect. But I know I lost track of him. I wouldn't have seen a video of his for many years. The only time I would have seen him was on your other millennials. You said he fell out of favor with... I remember at one point he started raving a lot about how Pepe the Frog was occultism, and he got like very seriously Catholic, which is fine. But there was a period there where a lot of people were doing that. I knew a guy personally here who was like that. He suddenly became he wasn't raised Catholic at all, but he even though he was Irish, he was just atheist. I don't remember what he was. But he became devoutly Catholic. Well, through a girlfriend, I think at first, and then like a girl he just met even or something. Then he was so Catholic, he refused to have sex with her. And then she eventually left him because of this, because he was too too Catholic to have sex after just out of the blue, like 1 year. I'm so Catholic that, he too was raving about how this and this was occultism and you can't do this, can't do that. There was a period of
time. I remember this now that you've mentioned it. I'd completely forgotten about this. I mean, that was one reason why he fell out of favor with people. I don't want to sort of analyze that because he's not here to defend himself, and
to say glowing things about him. I don't want to belittle him. I thought he was great.
I agree. I mean, he's a flawed guy, but you know, I'm very flawed, so
Look at me posting little nudie pictures of what am I doing, like, for God's sake.
I just feel that people don't appreciate him enough, but I think that maybe they don't see his early stuff. He's another one who got banned from YouTube quite early. I think it was late 2018 when he got banned out of the blue. And I think it was actually other people on his own side, like his former friends who did it, if I recall correctly. I can't remember, but it was some kind of campaign to report his stuff. And he lost his channel. It's gone, which is a real loss. I think it's a genuine loss.
That's a weird thing that happens often. You and I were talking about there too. We won't say anything about anybody specifically, but that is weird how people you should get along with or do and just turn against each other very viciously over like some trifling like more people have to understand that you're never going to agree with somebody 100% about everything. They're always going to have some disagreement, and you shouldn't get too, you should try your best not to overreact to it. I always expect to disagree with somebody. You know what I mean? Like some people, if you don't, if you want 100% on board with everything, they're done and they get angry, like very angry.
It's bizarre. And this is something that I've talked about a lot, and I could have talked about a hell of a lot more. But the narcissism of small differences, where people will agree on 95% of things, but then they'll focus, they'll fixate on that 5% of disagreement, and make a war out of it. I think that we should always remember as dissidents that we are up against an opposition that is massively more powerful than us, and we absolutely don't have the luxury of being able to infight and sabotage each other. I mean, we can do it, but the only people that benefits are our enemies, and they sit back and laugh watching us pointlessly fall out with each other over stuff that really does not matter very much. We should have a completely different attitude to this, where we're thinking what can be achieved rather than what do we disagree on? Let's find the impurity. It's such an incredibly unhealthy and destructive attitude.
Well, the tolerance where I would like to see more tolerance. So there's two, I would think there are two or maybe more will occur to me, but there's at least two things I get the most grief for, people lash out at me for. It's either for posting the beautiful women, would you believe? Or it's like I post a beautiful girl and they're irate. I mean, imagine that reaction. But anyways, or I have certain, I consider myself a Platonist, and I do a lot of talk about Platonism and paganism, let's say, even though I'm not, I'm also sort of Catholic at the same time in certain ways, just because I can't not be because I was raised it. And I'm not anti-Christian at all. So I can easily post one or the other religious thing and to myself not feel at all paradoxical or at odds. But this causes a lot of people lash out immediately. They're like, you've got traditionalists in your name and you're not, you know, you're pacing this pagan stuff, this kind of reaction, you know, there's a lot of tension over that. You don't go into religion so much. So maybe I don't think
I could. No, I don't. But and again, see, that's my attitude, where I don't mind what other people do about, you know, whether they're pagan or a Christian, or I kind of do mind if they're an avowed atheist, because you know, it's like I get it. All right, you want to declare that, but just declare it once and then leave it.
You know, that's hilarious, because you're an atheist, you're an atheist yourself, right? You are an atheist.
Well, this is partly why I don't want to call myself an atheist. I call myself an agnostic, because I don't want to be associated with people who are proud of believing in nothing. You know, I wouldn't say it shames me that I don't believe in a religion, but it's not something that I want to boast about, put it that way.
Yeah, no, it's just hilarious to be almost an atheist yourself, but getting angry at them.
Yeah, funny. I know.
You could say agnostic, or you can say deist. Those are good ways out to be non-specific. I think you have to be thinking. I shouldn't say this because I'll get in trouble. But you know, that's like my view is that we are all pagan and Christian at the same time. I've decided this recently. I want to try and write something about this and explain it. And there's no avoiding it. No one is 100% Christian or 100% pagan who's grown up in the West for a long time. And it's been mixed and muddled, and you shouldn't get too offended or irate that one person is one more or the other. There's ways. It's very hard because, especially from a Christian point of view, you think there's going to be hell involved if you deny the specifics of the religion. And from the pagan point of view, there's a lot of blather in the Bible about Israel and things that's incredibly annoying. And you know, there's these certain, you're very hard to reconcile things, but if you can get around it and think deistically, I think you can try to accept and embrace the fact that you are both at the same time already, is my view, my new view.
And then what that's an interesting view, and I think that paganism retains a presence in our culture, and even now and it might be that I see more of it around because of the circles that I'm in. But I mean, I did actually see that someone, I've forgotten where I saw this, but it was somebody said that Catholicism is the merging of paganism. It's the reintegration of some aspects of paganism with Christianity. What would you say about that?
Yeah, yeah. I think Evola said it was the most pagan form of Christianity. Yeah, it is, because it's really, it makes it all, it's compared to Protestantism anyways, because it makes it all about the ritual, which is, and not so much about the specific, the book, the liturgy of the book. It's more like the ritual itself is, and that the ritual in a proper Latin Catholic mass is very Roman. And in fact, I remember not long ago, I was reading the Odes of Horace. I have an old copy of it. And it described a kind of a mass to Zeus. You wouldn't call it a mass, but it was, he was giving one of his odes anyways. You know, and it was very, very, it just reminded you of a Catholic mass, except he's talking about Zeus.
You know, I went to a funeral in Italy 10 years ago, and it was I'm a quarter Italian, and it was a relative, an elderly relative who died, and it was the only time I've been at a Catholic funeral, and it was you know, I've been at a Protestant funeral at two, I've been at a humanist funeral, which was awful, frankly, really. And I actually made a video about it very early on in my channel. And actually, funnily enough, it's funny because that video, it was called Reflections on a Humanist Funeral. And that got shared by Orini, Davis Orini. And that led to the first sort of surge of subscribers for my channel, oddly enough. So it's funny that we ended up saying that. But yeah, that was a video about this, just, well, Reflections on a Humanist Funeral. And I mean, there were numerous things about it that I noted at the time, at just how sort of absurd it was, and how empty it was, and how shallow and how childish it was. Like the woman who gave the service, who would be the equivalent of the priest or minister, was sort of using slang language, sort of casual language, informal language, and I thought it's like you're not even pretending to take this seriously. There's a frivolity about it all.
It reminds me of the fat women rebelling against fashion aesthetics. In that it's nothing but a puerile rebellion. There's no basis to it other than to attack and slap in the face. The real tradition, and to say no, you know. No, they don't have anything, though. They don't.
No, there were various things that she made out, that the deceased was a sort of Superman. And I remember making this point in the video that without God, the individual is then the sort of the sky's the limit. You know, you can be this incredible guy. And she was lavishing. I mean, obviously, she'd never met the deceased, but the guy who died. But she was describing him as if he was just incredible. And he wasn't. I mean, he was a nice guy, but he was you know, ordinary, average guy. He wasn't an Ubermensch. But without God and without the whole structure of a religion, without that canopy, then you've just got to, you end up being hyperbolic about the virtue of the person. So that was another thing. And then she made a point that he had lived by his own morality, which again is just a ridiculous thing to say. I mean, that was her asserting that he wasn't religious. He was a humanist like me. When really he didn't live by his own morality. It was a post-Christian society that he lived in. He would have completely absorbed all of that.
So he was quite cozy and popular opinion, I'm sure.
So there's no way that he came up with his own moral code. That's just ludicrous. So that was another thing. And then I've forgotten what other observations there were. But I mean, I mostly just feel sorry for people who do this, because I understand why they're doing it. They don't believe in Christianity. They don't believe in paganism. They're not Buddhist or Jewish or Muslim. So they're looking for some other way to wrap up a person's life and see them off and acknowledge that they existed. And some way to commemorate them and to allow people to say goodbye and pay their respects. So what do you do? I mean, it's a bloody difficult question.
And I'd say almost all of them were raised with one of those traditions and would have some knowledge of it. Maybe not always, but you know, going through the more traditional route is acknowledging even the sacred mystery and giving it a name. You know, when they're overly negative with their humanist attempts because they remove anything, they remove all the mystery and all the sacredness and all the reference to something. You know, whatever we're doing here, it's been put in motion by some sort of force. You can call it the universe or whatever, God, whatever you like. But like, at least then you're putting a name to it that was chosen for you by your, you know, in the genealogical past, and you're carrying it along. It doesn't, you know, the humanism, I just find overly negative in the desperation to be 100% rational.
Yeah, and it reduces everything to the here and now. It's not acknowledging something eternal, whether it is the universe or God or nature. It's reducing. It's just us.
So it's hard to explain, but you have to have that element, and you can't. It's very hard to explain why you do, but you do. You have to have that, you know, crazy sounding, actual religious element, and I just think you'd be better. You know, it's that old thing, you can say that a lot of people turn to Christianity just because they can see Christians leading happy lives and they can see that it has a material effect, you know, and this is true. This is true. When you show reverence for the mystery, there seems to be something that helps you in a totally material sense that's unexplainable.
Yeah, I've seen this myself, and I don't want to assert that, you know, religion equals happiness, contentment and fulfillment in life, but there does seem to be a correlation between people who are secure in a religious faith and then people who are content in life in general. It does. I mean, I do believe that the religious impulse is just there. I think it's innate to human beings. I think that we need religion. Whether that's a delusion, whether that's a mistake, whether that's a glitch in our, you know, software or not, it doesn't really matter. It's still there.
Well, you're just kind of observing, you know, reality is amazing and mysterious. You know, you're just kind of observing that in whatever way you can without being sort of cocky and negative towards it. I'm not choosing the best words here maybe, but that's how I see it anyways. Like my father was a devout atheist, let's say, and his life was kind of a misery, and not completely. I mean, he was fine in a lot of ways, but he was very impulsive, and you could see how it affected him in his decision making. Let's say he didn't care about a lot of things, you know, and he would be overly negative, and he'd have a sly smile he'd always be mocking someone religious, and you know, denigrating all of that. But his own life was often. His choices seemed very bad to me, and I know that played a part in his choices. He was just a bit of a nihilist, really, because of it.
Yeah, and this is the thing that really offends me. The proud nihilist, the person who is glad and who goes on about the fact that they believe in nothing, the fact that they don't believe in an afterlife or God. To me, that's if God doesn't exist, then that's a really sad thing. It's not something that I think it's not a cause for happiness. No. If God doesn't exist, that's a disaster. If God doesn't exist, in my view, it's not something for, I don't understand how people can feel smug about it. But I guess that part of it is that they feel they've escaped being programmed. You know, right. So that's why they're proud of themselves.
When you saw the Italian, burial, it was obviously all in Italian, was it? Do you speak Italian?
No, I don't. Nor do I speak Latin. but much to my shame, I wish I did. I keep telling myself that I will learn that one day. But yes, that's the third that I was going to get to. So I've been to a humanist funeral, two Protestant funerals, and this Catholic, like traditional Catholic funeral in Italy. And it was the darkest. I mean, it was... They had the, I've forgotten what it's called, the sort of incense. Yeah. And there was definitely, sorry?
I said, that's great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it felt serious. It felt mysterious. It felt dark. It felt we are taking this seriously. We're not fucking joking around and pretending that this is a celebration of the fact that he was alive. It, you know, yeah. It's like jumping around happy clappy. It felt like that we are currently in a process of acknowledging that things matter.
Yeah.
We are, this is a ritual that affirms that, that life is serious.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's very important. I mean, and like people, atheists and people caught in between cast thoughts of funerals and births out of their minds, I guess mostly, but it's not so hard to go along with the tradition. Or, I mean, ideally, I probably like say a Viking funeral would be pretty amazing and impressive. Just getting burnt. Let's say, like when I die, I'd love to have be burnt on a hill or something like that. It'd be, I think that'd be pretty cool. But yeah, it's handy to go with the tradition that you know, I guess. But this is all stuff I like to promote on Aureus Press as well. In between little pictures of women in muscle cars, little bits of classical philosophy or these kind of religious or quasi-religious notions. So if to come around about to what I do on those pages, the obscure collage of imagery and then little bits of this and that. I mean, that's a factor in there too. I do, although I've taken it easy on spiritual matters lately because I've gone beyond being agnostic, let's say, but I am something more of a deist. I wouldn't be very specifically religious. So it's kind of hard. It's very hard to explain my position. Anybody who's modern and thinking about it, maybe it's hard unless they go for full board fundamentalist. I'm this. But that's also hard to do.
Well, it depends on your upbringing. I think for some people, it's very easy to just declare yourself, you know, a strident Catholic, a strident Protestant, or it's definitely these other the foreign religions, Hinduism and Islam and Judaism. I think that for them, it's very easy to just declare themselves a believer in this or that. It's for Westerners that it's difficult to, because there is such a presence of atheism in our society, in our culture. And I was going to show you this graphic, this meme a few minutes ago. So here it is now. You can give your thoughts on this horrendous image.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what they are.
Isn't that just... Oh, God.
Well, it just shows that, like, everybody's talking about this a lot, but yeah, the whole religious impulse plays its way out. It's like, wasn't it Ragnar Redbeard? You ever read that? What's the thing? What's it called?
I know of it. I can't remember what it's called. I'll get it.
But he's got a quote in there. If you take away a man's God, he creates 1,000 in his place.
Oh, Might is Right.
Might is Right. That's it. Yeah. Great book. And yeah, you know, so that's it. So that's why, to me, I see it now as the names and specifics of the stories are not so important. They're placed there to give you an anchor of sorts. But that's why I'm not bothered if someone's pagan or Christian or whatever. To me, it's, you know, it sounds a bit fruity and kind of like new agey to talk like this, but I don't see any other way. At least I'm glad I have a belief, and I feel fairly sure in that belief. I feel like Jung was I don't know if you read much Jung. He was fairly atheistic at the start, I believe, and he got into his psychology and has various experiences exploring the mind. And there was an interview with him I remember seeing once, and he was like, "Do you believe in God?" And he was like, "Oh, I don't believe. I know." And he was just, his approach was psychological and rational, and I don't know.
Didn't know that actually. I didn't know that about Jung, but it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Yeah.
This, I mean, what I was going to say about this image is just this ridiculous and tragic notion of the consumer thinking that he is free. The guy who is enslaved to, you know, what we might call global homo or just consumerism, imagining that he has escaped the shackles of religion and is now a free creature. Well, he's free to consume, but he's really free in no other way. He's because they've enslaved him to his appetites.
Yeah, his moral base was he removed it himself because for his appetites maybe. That again reminds me, dare I say, I don't want to be too personal, but my father was kind of like that. He would just like smoke a pack of cigarettes and eat like nothing but chocolate cake all day, ridiculous, babyish things like this. Maybe that was more. Maybe he was had a syndrome or something, because maybe it was a bit much. He wasn't like modern. He was also kind of hard though. He was a bit of a hard. He was like that old school kind of hard case. He was a hard guy in some ways as well. I don't know.
Yeah. I've taken that terrible meme away, so don't. Because it is gross.
That all got sparked off by me saying, so those were the two things that I find people get objection to, is the religious divide, the beautiful girls, the people that get angry with me anyways. Yeah, what else? There's some other ones, but
I mean, do you ever get feminists complaining?
Stay away. Maybe on Facebook, but I block them immediately. I don't even, if I try to respond, I'll get that warning about bullying, and I'll get a week-long or 30-day ban or something. If I say anything to them, if they have impunity, just tell me they hope I die, or that, you know, that I never, you know, that that my family dies or something. But if I respond at all, I'll be in trouble.
I mean, I know that this is what it's like on Twitter now, and I know that it's definitely how one of my Twitter accounts got banned.
Responding to an argument.
Yeah, it's actually, I can't even, I think the first one was because I said something about black crime rates. I think the second one was I responded to a woman and, I said that in response to a woman. So it was the original account, yeah. And then the second one was I responded to someone else. And that's what they just get you on target. They call it targeted harassment because you've replied to someone, but the person was replying to me in the first place. It's just absurd. As you say, they have they can just operate with impunity. It doesn't.
Impunity. They have total control. Yeah, and Twitter's almost pretty much as bad now. Yeah, so I avoid any arguments. You just got to block and move along, which is good. Then they're not around, and you can say what you want more. I mean, they're always lurking around somewhere, I guess. The last run-in with kind of feminists I had was actually those kind of rad fem crowd. But even like a couple of them, one in particular I was friends with, and she was like warning me about them. I made a post on Twitter. This is like, must be a year or two ago. Something about, I criticized feminism in some way. That was incredibly reasonable. There was a post, something about Girl Guide muffins or cupcakes, and they were making the Girl Guides make like vagina shaped icing on the top of the cupcake. This was like the Girl Guides were making the girls do this, like appalling shit. Like, imagine.
Gosh, I remember hearing that there was some feminist who'd become the CEO of the Girl Scouts in America or the Girl Guides, and I can't remember which one it was. Almost immediately, I think it was 2 months later, there was a story about them. They were removing references to God from all of the stuff that I can't remember. That might have been the Boy Scouts, but there was definitely some almost immediate effect of the feminist women getting in charge of the Girl Scouts. There was some weird change that she made. I can't remember, but very predictable change. I mean, you know what's going to happen.
Vagina shaped cupcakes.
Yeah, I mean, they don't take control of these institutions for nothing. They take control of them so as to subvert them and destroy them.
Yeah. So I made some very reasonable response to that. I don't remember what. So just saying, you know, basic criticism of feminism. I couldn't resist. I was outraged. And a bunch of that crowd, like a whole bunch of them attacked me like very viciously. Basically, one of them was crazy or stupid and misunderstood what I said a little bit. But then they all kind of dogpiled. They were all in a group, you know, what do they call it? Rallying or whatever. But that was my last run-in, and that was a while ago. That's the last one I remember with any kind of feminist problem, really. I think they know, I don't even want to argue at all, and I'm not remotely feminist or feminist sympathetic.
You'll have no truck with their sort.
Well, I mean, what's the point?
Yeah.
You know what I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to harp on about women as much. Even when I do it, I think I shouldn't do it as much as I do. But I do think it's like the problem is so ingrained in everything now because we never had feminism before, you know?
I know exactly what you mean, because it's something that you wish didn't have to be said, because by saying it, you sound bad.
It sounds mean. It sounds cruel. And I don't like to sound so cruel. But you kind of, I feel like you have to remind people, because they always kind of forget, because you get used, because it's been around. Now it's been around for a while. But I hear people in our circles or adjacent circles, they come up with theories and books about, oh, look at the history and look what's going to happen here. This is based on what, you know, the civilization did and what's going to happen here. And I always think, well, there's one thing none of those civilizations had, which is feminism, which has pushed women into controlling points of every institution and every possible, you know, thing, club of any kind, everywhere. And they control most of them because you can't really say no to them by law in the West. And this is a whole new paradigm that is a force for chaos that is unbelievable. I'll say something that sounds cruel, but for the reason that they make decisions for emotional reasons, and you know, that's just the way it is, and everybody knows they do that, and that leads to chaos. But I wrote an article for Classical Wisdom Weekly, and it's going to come out soon, about Egyptian education. Now, Egypt is a kingdom, or not kingdom, what do you call it? What would you call it? A civilization lasted thousands of years, and through all those millennia, women were never, for instance, educated at school. They were taught at home by the mothers. They were allowed to learn weaving, dancing, cooking, things like this. If they were wealthy, they learned how to manage the slaves of the house, etc. And, you know, this was done not to be cruel or anything, but you need to train the mothers. Motherhood is the cornerstone, really, of any civilization, as is fertility, which is another thing I like to promote always, is that you've got nothing if you aren't training women to be mothers. And just for the birth rates issue alone, that's civilization right there that you have to protect. And that's apart from the feminizing of society you get if you put them into the workforce and everything else. So all this sounds cruel, doesn't it? I mean, I don't mean to sound cruel, but that's Egypt for you. And that's all of history before the 60s. So everything since then is an experiment. And it seems like chaos to me. Not that they're, you know, there's other people controlling forces above that have foisted this feminism upon us. But, you know, most women I know are feminist at some level. I don't know about you.
Oh, yeah. I think it's very difficult for them not to be. There's a lot that can be said. But again, it's like it's very difficult to say anything on this without sounding like like you hate women.
Yeah. I don't think so.
But I'm just sort of I'm very aware.
Well, I love them for being
it.
Women. You know, I love them when they're women. I'm not. You know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. I mean, everything has to have its proper place in life and in the world. And I just, you see, the thing is, the complicating factor here is women can be very good at organizing things. So you've always had, you know, the community thing, that some project that's organized by a woman, it's run by a woman, and she does it very well. Yeah. So to say women shouldn't be in charge of things is a bit too simplistic. But at the same
just keep in mind that was the case for most of history, that there was a certain level of, you had to keep a certain level of that in mind. And back then it was just for the reason of tradition or religion. But we've experimented with seeing the reverse. Like, you wouldn't put women in charge of anything in any of the period of Egypt or Rome or Greece or Christianity up till the 60s. Really? Would you? You'd be specifically in nursing, and they'd be secretaries. Beware of that, just because while they're excellent organizers, the decision making will tend towards this kind of neoliberalist stuff.
And also strangely, a lack of innovation. You know, because you'd think that they would have flexibility or curiosity about trying new things, but actually women are very, very conservative about innovation. They just don't, because I just don't think they have that in their nature. I've seen this time and again where men will look for ways to improve something and do it better, whereas the women will shy away from that and think, no, this way works, because it's safety. I mean, that, I guess it goes back to that. It's if they prioritize safety over expansion or experimentation. So
yeah, which is perfectly natural and exactly what they should be doing, anyways. But they can be very robotic in their order following, which is a benefit in some ways, an immediate, apparent, superficial benefit to corporations and things. Like, I actually remember I had a girlfriend who was a feminist, but this is years, many years ago, before when feminism was much milder. And my door's banging there. And she, what was her story? She had an example of, she knew, she did a lot of flying, and she knew when she went to the airport and she was trying to fiddle around, she wanted to get her luggage a certain way. She wanted to get not have to pay as much for things, and she had some kind of goofy plan for how she was going to arrange her luggage. She knew if the attendant was a man and she presented a reasonable argument, she could get away with this and that. But if it was a woman, that the rules would be 100% followed without variation, any possible variation, regardless of any sensible argument you can present. And I remember thinking, yeah, you're right. This is like many years ago. But that's a quality to them, too. They're very funny creatures all around. It's very... I mean, do we sound like jerks? I don't want to sound like... I don't want to harp... Everybody harps on about them. And I do, too. Every now and again, I read a headline, I guess. Or I have a realization about the world or an anecdotal experience. And I just feel like, oh, I've got to express this. I feel like it's bugging
this
me.
This is the thing, you know, we talk about it, and we sound like we're complaining, because we are complaining, because up until this era, this stuff would just never have happened. So there was never a need to complain about it. So obviously we're complaining about it because there's just something wrong with the whole thing. It's completely unprecedented in society, in history, for women to be in control of things and to be in charge of things. So obviously men are going to find it rather annoying. And not just because of, you know, our lack of position in society that is supplanted by the women, but because of the way they do things. I mean, women are very good at looking after a home, looking after a family, the domestic environment. That's fine. I don't think anyone would deny that. But it's once they're in control of social things in society that it starts to... Well, first of all, you've got the lack of innovation. But then once you inject a sort of loathing or feministic loathing of tradition and patriarchy and whatever into that, then they start to enact that. So
I think there's an inability to make a hard decision. You know, you get unwinnable decisions, let's say, where you have to choose the lesser of two evils. They'll just capitulate from that altogether. You know, they won't be able to make the decision you have to make whenever that comes up. Does that make sense?
Yeah. That's another thing. But I don't like talking about this because it's just all we can see is negative stuff, right?
It doesn't even matter anymore because they feminize men. They feminize men to the point we've got these men that are behaving like women, and it's all the same now. It doesn't matter. There's not even much point complaining. We just kind of carry on and hope it somehow breaks up, dissolves itself soon somehow, I guess.
Yeah, and what I would say in terms of something positive is that there are still women who hate this stuff. There are still women who are, you know, healthy and feminine. They are. I mean, I know that they exist because I've had relationships with quite a few of them. So they are still around. It's just a matter of finding one. So don't despair, guys.
I tell this stuff to my wife even, and she doesn't love it, but she knows what I think. She would be. She understands. She mostly agrees. She doesn't like to hear it. This is the thing. You can't tell them. They just don't like to hear it. So you don't. In your personal life, don't say it to them. If I say it online through my Aureus Press, I don't care. Right? I want to say something outrageous.
Exactly. I mean, who wants to be told? You know, your sex shouldn't be in charge of things. That's not a nice thing to be told. It's not a nice thing to hear. I think that your sex is bad at innovation, or that you follow rules too. Will you stop doing that?
Will you stop? But that's the whole ridiculous of it. You either have the control or you don't. We don't have the power to stop them. And so there's nothing we can do, like, in a way, until things get really bad. And something sweeps over us and changes everything utterly. Some kind of new morality, as Nietzsche would probably rightly think is going to happen.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if there is civil collapse, feminism will just be out the window, like, that night. That'll be it. It will be completely forgotten about. And it's something that I think will be fascinating if it does happen, and I'm sure that eventually it will. I mean, just on a long enough timeline, it's inevitable it's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
It will be astonishing to people how easily women let go of feminism and turn to men for protection and safety. It will be astounding. You will get the blue-haired feminist crazy who suddenly becomes a loyal, loving, obedient wife because A, it's the only way to have safety, and B, it's what everyone else is doing anyway. So she'll be very conformist in that way. I think it will be quite incredible.
Yeah, we'll learn a hard lesson, like perhaps happened, God knows what, Atlantis or something. And then for thousands of years, you know, people will be kind of mean to women and not letting them into politics and things, and they won't really have a reason. They'll have to have a religious reason. They tout, like, no, you're just not allowed. But it will be based on this event that will be forgotten over time. And that's what probably happened over the last few thousand years. Maybe it happened once before already. Who knows? Because it's in the tenets of Christianity and this, you know, the very strict in every kind of belief system, proper tradition, there's strict rules about women. And obviously there's, you know, like I said, there's the for the reason of fertility in your civilization alone, you know, I'm sorry, but you need the mothers. And, you know, it's a great job. It, like, being a mother and having a home, and it's what everyone wants, or what they should want. It's a crucial, crucial job. It shouldn't be, thought of as something to throw away so you can go do work on Excel spreadsheets or whatever.
Oh, absolutely not. It is a role. There is, and it's a role that is absolutely essential for our survival.
It's the role,
we're not going to have a healthy society where the kids are being raised by someone else. That's completely perverse and unsustainable. So ultimately, we need women to be mothers. It's as simple as that. What do you think about this stuff with artificial wombs? I mean, these guys who want to just actually get rid of women. I find it bizarre and perverse.
It's like that transhumanism stuff. I wrote a little article on it once, and it was, it's like a plastic embryo tube thing where this is where you would, what do you call it? What's the word for when they're developing, whatever?
Fetus.
So, yeah, no, but the, what's the word? It begins with gest, like ingest.
Gestation.
Gestation. That's it, gestation. So it's basically like a plastic, like, cubicle. It's like the Matrix, really. That's like a little thing, and you incubate them in this until they're a certain age and all this. And, you know, to begin in plastic like that, and not even in a human womb, let alone not knowing or having proper parents, I mean, it is a bit horrifying. There is some things about it, I remember when I was researching it, that were kind of positive. What were they, though? I can't remember now. Something to do with medical stuff.
It probably is. I'm sure it can monitor exactly the chemical levels and ensure that the baby gets exactly what it needs and all that. I'm sure that it wouldn't surprise me at all if there aren't actually some medical.
Oh, yeah. Like, you know, for severely, what's the word? I'm freaking out my words. What's the, when the baby's born too early?
Premature.
Premature. Severely premature. It was something that would keep them alive. That was good, I guess.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course. I mean, I'm not going to declare it's perverse, therefore it has no benefits. It might well have benefits, and then we're going to have the ethical decision to make about whether to do it because it has these benefits, even though it's perverse. There are some people who will, you know, that's going to be a huge debate in the future, I imagine. But yeah, we're not there yet. There are some questions for you.
Okay.
Hold on a second. Well, first of all, somebody says, Tulthor says, sorry, it's my first time, I am making a donation. Anyway, I just wanted to tell you to ask for donations more often. I guess this is the only way you can promote yourself. Fuck the haters, the ones who criticize you as a grifter. They aren't part of the struggle anyway. Well, thank you very much. And I probably should. I'm just not good at it. And I'm not in the habit of it either. But even when it occurs to me to do it, I feel bad doing it.
Yeah, me too. I hate it.
Yeah, but I tell other people to do it. I tell other people, don't get over that guilt. It's irrational. You are giving something to the world, so you deserve remuneration. But then when it comes to me doing it, I feel bad. But yes,
that's a healthy response, because it is kind of the cheesy salesman kind of crap. You know, we do have to do it, but yeah, you should feel bad, because it is that kind of mercantile attitude.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, I know rationally that I am giving them something, so I shouldn't feel guilty about asking for donations. But you can go to millennialwoes.com/donate, and that has all of the donation options. The same website, millennialwoes.com/crypto, is for crypto stuff, including Bitcoin Lightning. There is Entropy for Super Chats. There's Cointree for Super Chats. This year, there is the Millennial T-shirt, and there is also the NFT, which I believe is the auction is either ending tomorrow or the day after. I think it's the day after. It says 2 days left, so it must be the 31st. So these are the ways that you can support me. And the donate page has all the ways that you can do that. And obviously, I would be very grateful. So if you have enjoyed Millennial, or you enjoy the Gram broadcast that I do throughout the year, then please do consider supporting me. That would be great. Gold, yes. All right, so here are the questions. So thank you, Tulthar, for pushing me to say that. Nordic Track says, and this is for you, he says, your Telegram channel is an absolute gem. I look forward to the posts daily. My question is, do you randomly find these photos, or do you actively seek them out? Take it that way.
Can be both. Pinterest is a great resource. As I said, I'm usually working or something, and I just like, I'll just take a minute, take a second to, I'll have them open in my browser. But Pinterest or certain Tumblr accounts usually, and I'll just scroll through and I see something that seems right, and I'll just do it. Yeah. Those two are the resources, the chief resources.
I know that I have sent you some photos sometimes, which I
think
just once or twice I've sent you something that I thought would fit in against your sort of thing. About Pinterest, you know, I'd never used it before, and I still don't have. Do I have an account? I must have an account, because they send me emails based on what I've looked at, and it's like, it's just endless. I mean, I looked at photos of London buses just out of curiosity, and one day, and then I get loads of emails. Here are more photos of London buses. the classic Routemaster design. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's the red London bus. It's the iconic design.
And
so you get all these lovely old photos of. Hold on a minute. I'll find one for you so that I don't even need to tell you.
Oh, and thanks to the questioner for saying it was a gem. I didn't respond to that. Thanks.
Yeah.
But I don't actually get emails from them. I never get emails from Pinterest. I just go through it, and I like that it's, you know, you update your homepage, and based on what you've been searching generally, you know, you get a feed of things related to what you're. Oh yeah. Yeah, beautiful.
That kind of thing. So it's lovely. Yeah, it's London in the late 70s, and it's one of the classic Routemasters. It's lovely. And I'm not a train spotter. I don't know about the individual models or whatever, but it's just nice. It's an,
it's metal. It's a metal car, and they've got that nice kind of Art Deco curves at the front, that kind of effort into the design that they just don't do anymore. First of all, just like sheer, like pure metal. Now it's just like this kind of plasticky Bondo stuff.
It's awful. I mean, you know, these Routemasters were all designed and built in the 50s, and they got rid of them in about 2005. Oh. 50 years they lasted.
They probably were still going. They just thought, oh, we must be new.
And yes.
They were,
Yeah, that is exactly what happened. They were still in fine working order, but they decided to replace them all with a new design, which is shit. But it's for accommodating disabled people, because you couldn't get a wheelchair onto one of these. And, you know, I get it. But at the same time, that means that we've got rid of an iconic London thing. And I have to say, the replacement is just aesthetically inferior. There's no question. I mean, it's just horrible. Yeah. I've got loads of photos, and they've come from Pinterest of route masters and
What annoys me about public transport, and it's the same anywhere you go, any country in the West, is it all annoys me, but what really annoys me in the interior design is they always have this kind of patterns on the seats, this kind of faux post-80s bizarre multicolored crap that just looks terrible. And it's always the same. They'll be like, and these bright yellowy kind of gaudy mix of colors. Like there's no, I don't know why. It's like being in a little kindergarten, and like a little crash or something, you know?
I do know.
Infantile.
Yeah. So that's just one thing from Pinterest. You can look up, like, if you, like, I've had it with them, like Cyberpunk, and then I'm getting emails from them. And the thing is, I get swamped with these emails. I should really just deactivate them. But at the same time, I'll click on it and then spend, like, I don't know, 10, 20 minutes looking at all these photos. And Pinterest is an amazing resource for this stuff. I don't know how they are so good at indexing, so that it knows that one photo is related in some fashion to other photos of the same era. For example, it's really quite incredibly. I don't know what they're doing, but
yeah, it's good. It is good. Yeah. Great algorithm. Yeah. So there's no politics in it, I guess. So they're not going to. It's the way an algorithm should be. It actually brings up related content.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember what it was, but it started sending me photos of Avril Lavigne, and you know, it's just like endless photos of Avril Lavigne. Because I think I'd Googled her once, because somebody was asking for something about a few weeks ago, and then it's just like you cannot believe how many photos there are of Avril Lavigne in the room. But I guess it could be anyone, any of these women. But anyway, so that's the bane of having Pinterest in my life, and I should just unsubscribe from this email stuff. But anyway, it's a resource for sure.
Yeah.
So the rest of this guy's question was also, which internet archives do you use? Also, the sci-fi pics from the 70s are top notch. Keep it up. So which internet archive? I think obviously Pinterest. But...
Yeah, sometimes Tumblr. And that's it.
All right. Somebody says about Chain Reaction says about Latin. I wouldn't delay woes. I can also upload Latin for you if you need. Right. Okay. Well, thank you for that. Sea of the Gods says fringe heavy metal bands exert an inherently European art form, and a few current bands are expanding musical boundaries with legitimate conviction without all the LARP or anti-religious sentiments. Who is your favorite metal band?
Mine. I have to say, I'd like to think of a favorite. I have to go for the classic, even though it's very typical. But Black Sabbath, I think, is the best. I know Woes, you're not so much into the metal, but they were. I mean, the ones who invented it, pretty much. So, and just were an amazing band. So, it's a really English invention. Really, it's a. Where were they from? Manchester, wasn't it?
Oh,
I think Judas Priest was from there. Black Sabbath. Black Sabbath.
Oh, right. Yeah. People are saying I don't know where they were from, but people are saying Sabaton, Motorhead, Wardruna, Bolt Thrower. I've not heard of these.
They're good. They're good. Yeah, I mean, you may not like them, but yeah, for a metal fan, they're good. Yeah, that's all good stuff.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know a French one so much. I can't say. If he posts them on my Telegram, I'll check them out. Sounds good. Sounds good to me.
Okay, let me see that there was some. Right. Okay, and yeah, I thought that there was another one. Okay, yeah, this is about donations. No, you're producing a product and the entertainment value alone is more than justification. Ignore those who try to instill doubt about that. They falsely think that you're getting easy money because they don't see all the groundwork that goes into these shows. Well, yes, there is a lot of work behind the scenes. I mean, I'm exhausted, actually. I realized today that I'm actually, like, next year I'm definitely going to finish it on Christmas Eve because it's just too much. I'm actually just slightly ill, actually, at this point. But nothing serious, just like I've got a sore throat, I'm coughing a lot and all this. It is. I think this happened in 2018 as well, and because I did 80 shows that year, and it was, I mean, far too much, you know. But I'm not complaining. I'm just saying it's every year I get reminded of my physical limits, but then the next year I always do it again because there are so many people who I want to have on or who want to be on. So I should really just, I've got to be more ruthless and just say, no, I'm not going beyond that number.
Well, it's a great tradition. I mean, everyone says it. It's, how many years have you done it now?
Well, the first year was 2015, although that was a completely different format. So really the first proper year was 2016. Right. So what does that make this? The sixth one? I think that, but,
I mean, people are scrambling to catch up with content. Like I am, I have to the backlog of videos is like, oh, I got to see this one.
Yeah, it's that's the thing. It means that there's a lot of stuff for people to catch on, to catch up with. And I've also I've forgotten a lot of the things that have been said over the last few weeks. Because there's been so much. And someone suggested actually just stretching it out and doing it from the 1st of December to the 31st and just doing one show a day or two shows a day.
Right.
But I don't like that idea. I don't like that idea at all because I like that it's compressed. It's like a frenzy of activity in a 2 week window or 10 day window. That's more exciting, even though I know it means that people will be swamped and they won't be able to watch all of them, but that's fine. I prefer that. I prefer that to the idea of it being a long, drawn out thing. Because I think people there wouldn't be much momentum then. There wouldn't be much excitement, I don't think. But anyway,
it's good to have a slot and just attack and bombard, I guess.
Yeah. So there was exactly a bombard, a sort of compression of stuff all going on in that window. I like that. Women are more social. They are more bound by dogma. Yes, I think they are. This is how they are more religious, more fascist, more communist than men. Definitely. And Orwell made this point in 1984 that it's the women who are the most doctrinaire and orthodox and preachy because it's women who enforce social mores in whatever society they're in. They will be the ones who enforce it. On the one hand, that sounds kind of weird, like they'll go along with anything and enforce anything. But men are the same, just to a lesser degree. I mean, men will basically just conform to their society, no matter how ridiculous it is.
Now more than ever that they've been so feminized, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, they've been so, weakened.
But again, the example, I think it's a great example of that one of my old girlfriends of the female, what do you call the baggage people, whatever, the female and the male one.
Yes.
The one that lets... present a rational argument, he'll let it slide. But with a woman, nope. This is the letter of the law.
Yeah. I've had similar experiences I don't want to describe it now. I think I have described it before. Someone says, Woz's brain must be mush by now. Yeah, it kind of is. I feel like I'm not as sharp as I was at the start of this. I mean, keeping up with some of the streams yesterday was... actually quite a struggle. I kept phasing out, which is not a good sign. I mean, that's not a good host if you're phasing in and out of the very conversation that you're hosting. And that's definitely, I don't like the idea that you know, the later streams aren't going to be as good quality as the early ones, because, you know, I feel guilty about that.
Nah, I'm sure they'll be good. I already watched one from yesterday. It was good.
Oh, thank you. Again, I worry too much about this stuff. That's my nature. But anyway, that's probably it. I mean, is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
No, that's good for me. Yeah. Okay. I'm happy with it.
All right. It's been a nice. So I did ask you. I did want Aureus Press to appear this year, and last year as well, actually. But for various reasons, it didn't happen. So I'm glad that we've been able to do this, that we were able to arrange it. So tomorrow it will be the Morgoth stream, which I think a lot of people will be looking forward to. Hopefully he and I will both be in fine fettle by then. And then that will be it. So
great question.
All right. Okay, so Aureus Press, thank you for appearing on Millennial.
Thank you for having me. That was great fun. And Merry Christmas. And have a new year. I'm sure. Happy New Year, sorry.
Okay. And, Happy New Year to you.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Yeah. See you tomorrow night. Bye-bye for now.
Bye.
Millennial Woes has created many things, and this is your chance to own one of them. A unique piece of work handcrafted by the Vile Vlogger to commemorate Millennial 2021. 100 hours of highly skilled labor went into producing this animated vector graphic, which can be magnified to any size. In the iconic Millennial Woes font, it glistens and responds to your touch. And at the center of it all, a figure representative of 2021, the White Stag, symbolizing endurance, discovery, and rejuvenation. This one-of-a-kind creation is up for sale as an NFT. Follow the link below, and it can be yours forever. This is your only chance.